Trent Gillette on the one that talks in Penn and Teller on the Free FM CBS radio. And I'm sitting here with Michael Gudeau as always, but there's a, we didn't even get to announce this yesterday. So people are, this is a total surprise for people. But, yesterday I got an emergency, a showbiz emergency call from Dee Snider. And he was asking me to do him a favor Saturday night. So of course I flipped it and made him do me a favor, and he came in, and he's doing our show here. So this is Dee Snider.
Yeah, what happened? Yeah, you just realized something.
Yeah, it was a very, very fast move that happened on the phone. You were tell what you're doing here in Vegas.
Well, I've got a gothic rock orchestra called Van Helsing's Curse. Cool music for the coolest holiday, Halloween, and we're performing at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Friday and Saturday night. But on Saturday, I'm renewing my vows with my wife, Suzette. We've been married for 25 years, and I wanted, looking for a really cool person to wed us, and you were about 10th down. but that's top 10.
And the number one choice was George Bush.
Number one choice was actually Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper, sure.
Who was working. All the really creepy people are working this time of year, as you are as well, and I am too.
Yeah,
so if you want to get a good creepy person to marry you, it's tough.
Yeah. Well, if you are a good creepy person and you want to marry Dee Snider, 866-570-7. That's 7366. I mean, perform the ceremony.
He's already married.
You know, I've done that. Once in New York for some friends.
Oh, you have.
But they had to, because I wouldn't put my hand on the Bible, because all that melting flesh thing.
Well, you hate when that happens.
You don't want to do that. They actually had a backup guy there that just said, everything he said goes for me too. It's done. And then in L.A., I did that for friends, and I had to prove that I was a pillar of the community. There was all this stuff to do when you're not going to do the religious stuff. And when I did the ceremony, they said to me when I went in that I had to swear to uphold the Constitution. And I went, Jesus, a lot of work to do. You know, I had to fly to Washington. You worked on trying to uphold the Constitution.
Yeah, I tried. It's a tough job.
It's a really tough job. You were there for a whole afternoon talking to him, weren't you?
Yeah, that was in the 80s, the PMRC Senate hearings of me, Frank Zappa, and John Denver standing up.
Favorite power trio.
Yeah, you know what? Anybody says anything bad about John Denver, you got to answer to me, because that guy was awesome. I don't remember what he said, but he had them scurrying. Because I remember me and Frank were back. We say backstage. It was in somebody's office.
And your showbiz, it's backstage.
Backstage.
When you're there, it's backstage. The toilets you've played, that's backstage.
That's backstage. And I said, and we're wondering, what the hell is Denver going to say? Because at that time, he was such a goody two shoes. He had the Christmas specials and the talk show, and they got him a country boy. And the senators were falling over themselves with just flattery. He was literally coming from NASA, where John was in discussions to be the first musician in space.
Yeah.
Supposedly the first spaced out musician, very different thing. And we were like, what is he going to do? We're figuring he's going to hamstring us, you know, forget his roots. He got out there and he said he was completely against any kind of legislation or anything that would rate any kind of records, that he could certainly, his relationship with his kids could withstand an Ozzy Osbourne poster. And then the great phrase was, this reminds me of Nazi Germany. Well, man, you should have seen the senators running when the word Nazis came up. Everybody was bailing like rats off a sinking ship. You know, no one wanted to be attached to that. So he was great, John Denver. Awesome.
But the sticker still went on.
It was on before we even got done, which was really pissed me off. I mean, we arrived and already the Music Association had agreed to put a sticker on the record, so it was moot. So no matter what I said, no matter what Frank said or John, the point, we had already lost the battle.
Yeah.
So the small victory of going in there and making him look foolish, which I did, did really well. You know, I mean, it was, and you know what? The record industry folded. My peers, no one stood up. You know, Alice Cooper once said to me, he said, D, you went about it all wrong. You should have gone in and just thrown yourself at the mercy of the court. It's all true. It's all true. And the audience, they just didn't get. They were so apathetic.
It depends. It depends on whether I think a lot of the music industry saw it what it turned out being. In a cynical way, it's a way to sell records. You want to have that sticker, you sell more records, and they essentially sold out their country's ideals in exchange for a marketing tool.
All right, but here was the problem, and I would love to go back and say, I told you so.
But if you can go back in time, first buy the Microsoft stock, and then fix our country.
Good point.
Just a little bit of advice.
Note to self.
If you have a time travel
note to self.
Just do that.
No, I mean,
and
go
maybe
back now, like 20 years later, and say, hey, everything I said, my concern was that it would be used as a way to limit, keep certain records out of certain stores, certain chains.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that. There are chains that will not carry stickered records. So it isn't a matter of a record.
You want to get that? By you, Borden.
Sorry.
Tubular bells. Your career is ruined. That was his cell phone going off.
Tubular
bells.
I wanted to make it very clear it was tubular bells and not the Exorcist theme. Because you have some wiggle room if you call it the Exorcist theme. If you call it tubular bells, your career
is
ruined.
It only does that when Satan's calling.
Okay.
But I was concerned that people will use this to keep certain records from the public.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of making people aware, and it's true, and as I predicted, there are stores that won't carry stickered records. But even beyond that, there are stores like Best Buy who have forced the record makers to produce alt versions of records that you do not know is an alt version.
Mm-hmm.
So you go in to buy, say, the soundtrack to my movie Strangeland, which had a lot of curses and profanity on it. It has been altered and edited, and the only thing is on the side, it'll have an A version or B version, but you, the buyer, do not know that your music is being censored. And as a 50-year-old man, if I want to hear an F-bomb, I want to freaking be able to pick the damn thing up, you know?
Sure, of course.
So, and you know what, quite honestly, as a parent, I wouldn't mind an edited version, but tell me it's edited. Don't treat me like a child. Let me know that you'll modify this. And this is going on with video as well.
Well, I know that very well.
Yeah, Blockbuster. They've got companies out there who just don't care about a director's vision,
mm-hmm.
and they are cutting and chopping up video. And then, I went and got Reservoir Dogs, and I'm going, what's this hubbub about an ear? I don't see anything. And,
really?
And it was removed, and it did not say anything to let me know that I was viewing an edited version. So this was my concern about, stickering.
Well, and also, what I want to know about this whole thing, and maybe you're guilty of this too, so I can confront you, but how did Tipper Gore and Al Gore get forgiven?
You know what?
How did that happen? I mean, Frank Zappa, I don't think anyone has hated someone more than Zappa hated Tipper Gore. And when the election came around, the Zappa family supported Gore.
I'm guilty of it, too.
Why? How do you... You know, when Lou Reed... When I read that Lou Reed...
We bonded on Lou once. That was the first time I met you, and I made some Lou reference, and you turned to Teller, and you said, this guy's okay.
But Lou Reed played the vice presidential inauguration for Gore after a Tipper sticker was stuck on the street hassle. I mean, I don't know how did you turn on that? Why was it? I mean, is this a really cynical lesser of two evils thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I require my president to have greater than a 2.0 grade point average. I mean, this Bush is a moron.
Well, not compared to us, but maybe compared to Nixon. Yeah.
and he is. And it's an embarrassment. To me, it's an embarrassment. So, I mean, it was given one guy who was a piece of crap and was smart, and another one who was a piece of crap and was dumb.
But how do... I mean, first of all...
I mean, why didn't I go for the third party candidate?
No, why didn't you go for the seventh party candidate?
Because I felt that was just a vote for Bush indirectly.
The only way you can waste your vote is to vote.
Well, you're an atheist, like all the way down the line.
Well, no, I'm just saying that I really do not believe in voting for the lesser of two evils. But I was I remember reading that article on Zappa's family.
I didn't even know that.
Supporting and, Gore. Yeah. And, I mean, they addressed it. They were honest about it. They just said, I don't think Frank would have liked this. That they tried to spin it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing how they stopped being called tipper stickers. and Hollywood kind of totally went behind that. Like, oh, if you ask kids now, they probably think those stickers are a Republican idea.
And let me tell you, you know what? And that's, it was a Democrat.
Yeah.
But it was a very conservative Democrat. And I'll tell you what, after that event, my phones were tapped. My mail was being checked. My packages were being checked. I was, you know, I was...
Oh, by packages, you mean the mail packages.
Mail packages.
Because the other part you really liked being checked all the time. That's part of why you get into heavy metal.
Turn your head to the left and cough. And it just got really dark. And I'll tell you,
What are you talking about? They tapped your phone? How do you know that?
Well, I mean, you know, because you've got the delay in hanging up and you can't get up. You hear the clicking on your phone line. And my mail, my packages... My stoned out postman told me, D, I'm just giving you a heads up, your stuff's being gone through.
But I know that we have another thing we have in common, besides, you know, being tall and the same age, is that you're really non-druggy, right?
No drugs, no alcohol.
No drugs. Is that ever?
Ever.
Yeah, me too.
At 14, I got drunk. Laid on the ground, threw up on myself, swore if I ever walked again, that was it for me, and I'm a man of my word.
Yeah, man, they can keep a promise. Me, it's never, ever. I just watched other kids throw up on themselves and said, I don't want to do that. So we know that this kind of thing is not a drug-induced paranoia. Anytime a rock person tells me their phone's being tapped, I just go, oh, it's the drugs they're doing.
Yeah.
But in your case, that's not it.
No, no drugs, no
blows. What were they looking for? What were they trying to do?
Well,
you think you were like on the equivalent of a Nixon enemy list? You were like
very
John
much
Lennon?
So like Alice Cooper had a big dossier on him when the Nixon era. But when I was there, if you read the transcript, I made them look very foolish, and they were very upset. I'm telling you, there was one moment where Tipper said, the PMRC said that Under the Blade, a song I wrote, was about sadomasochism and bondage, and I'd written it about my guitar player's nodule throat operation. And I said, this song was about a throat operation. I can't help it if Ms. Gore has a dirty mind.
Uh-huh.
And Al, literally, his eyes were blowing out of his head. And when I made that comment, he couldn't say anything. At one point, Rockefeller said to me, you know, when you were insulting Senator Gore's wife earlier, and I said, whoa, 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 I thought this was supposed to be separate. I wasn't insulting the senator's wife. I was insulting someone who was attacking me endlessly in the media and making up cold-blooded lies about everything that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I said, nothing to do with the senator, but it was very incestuous, you know that, and it was an ugly situation.
But in that situation, why would you bother saying that it wasn't about SM? Because you'd be fine with a song about SM coming out on an album, wouldn't you?
You know what? It was a big mistake. Long term, it was a good thing, because it was the first time people viewed me as not a one-note horn. They said, wow, this guy has something to say. Mm-hmm. And at the first glimmers of people recognizing it was more to Dee Snider than a dude with a bloody bone on an album cover, you know, and a couple of anthems.
Now, with a dirty mind like mine, bloody bone means a whole different thing.
Yes.
But I'm a lot like Tipper Gore. Tipper Gore and I are so similar. We are very...
The White House. I'm going, seriously? But you know what?
You're seeing another side of Dee Snider. I interrupted you.
Well, that's the train of thought there. But at the time, it hamstrung my career, because I went on the air and I said, I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I'm a father. I've been with the same woman at that point for about 10 years or 15 years. And I said, I was born and raised a Christian, and I still adhere to those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And that really...
That would have lost me.
The masses, yeah. But, I mean, the kids were going, whoa. And then I proceeded to speak intelligently about an important subject, and we thought you were a crazed animal. But I am I'm just not a lifestyler. You know, I'm not one of those guys who, when he gets off the stage, is going around killing people, you know, vehicular, homicide, like Vince Neil.
Uh-huh.
Good going, Vince. No, but he's got a career. He's a rocker. You know, and what am I, you know?
Well, there's always been that, though. There's always been that in show business. You know, I mean, Charlie Parker said it, if you don't live it, it won't come off the horn, come out of the horn. And that's always been the justification for drunken writers. I mean, James Joyce, part of his genius was the fact he was self-destructive. And you have that, which I've always argued with.
Could we have a TV show about on bullcrap about that, please?
Exactly. I mean, it's one of the worst kind of myths we have going around, that you have to be not only self-destructive, but destructive. destructive of other people to be a talented artist.
And that feeds on itself, and people start to, I think they start falling into a pattern of behavior because they think, well, I've got to act this way if I want to be a successful artist.
I think that's absolutely true. And that's one of the reasons it's the list of people who are in show business and not druggy, it's Dwight Yoakam. You know,
Dwight
Yoakam is supposedly, I've never met him, but supposedly sober and no drugs or anything ever.
Okay.
And it's you and it's me and then the list.
Ted Nugent.
That's right. That's the other big one.
Gene Simmons
is also that?
Gene, clean and sober, always has been.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, let me tell you something, D. He created rock and roll without any drugs or any,
I know. Kiss was before Bill Haley of the Comets.
Yeah, apparently
way,
so.
Way before Hank Williams.
According to Gene. I mean, he created everything, that guy.
And Louis Prima, don't make me laugh. Gene was there before. He was there before the whole thing.
So yeah.
So when we want to get back to this phone tap thing, you know.
Right.
So you made them look foolish. Clearly,
yeah.
You were playing against type. How were those three people chosen? Frank Zappa, John Denver.
That I do not know. There was a TV docudrama on VH1 called mm-hmm. Warning Parental Advisory, and they claimed that, you know, some special interest groups brought me in to help their cause. My management called, and I never bothered to ask who called.
Because it's a weird, and it's actually, I think, a fairly smart trio. You know, it's a really smart trio.
Well, not on their part. Choosing me was the biggest mistake they made.
Oh, the people that were on the side of fighting it?
Yeah, I believe that was them. I believe they looked to see the face of heavy metal at that time in the 80s, and mm-hmm. I was the best known. And they figured, here's a guy we'll just bring up there and make him look foolish.
Oh, I see. That's what you were thinking. So they were picking people who were over the top. They thought Zappa would be too crazy. Is that the idea?
Well, I think, honestly, again, I don't have the answers. I think actually one of Zappa's kids may have told me that Frank asked to speak.
I am. That seems very, very likely.
Yeah, because he has something to say. John, I don't know how he got in there, and I never had a chance to thank him. And they're both gone, both dead. Accidents? I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm wearing Kevlar underpants.
They also saw the Kennedy assassination, both of them.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, when Gene Simmons planned it. They were there in the room. Because
exactly. So I think I was brought in as to just be a court jester.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a matter of fact, they asked to see what you're going to say in advance.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I want to see what you're going to say. Show me. I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And they said, well, we don't do that. I said, well, I'm not showing you mine. And they said, okay, who cares? And they let me go in there with, and if you read my testimony, I really knocked it out of the park. I did no good. And I set them up. It was beautiful, man. Snakeskin platform, boots, cut-off denim vest. I pulled my speech out of my back pocket like a bad kid's homework. You know what I mean? I'm there straightening it out. They're looking at me going, what the hell? I actually put mascara on, so take my sunglasses off. And then I start reading, and they go, oh, crap. You know? And then Senator Danforth at the time, who was one of the only reasonable people on the committee, said, you know, assuming there are some people's lyrics who do, you know, say these kind of things. And I open my mouth, he goes, not yours. And I said, thank you, Senator. You know, and I just, at that point, though, I said I wouldn't speak for the other people. But suddenly I became, you know, parents. This was the killer.
We're going to
Yellow Journal. Okay, you got to go.
Okay, we're going to go. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Dee Snider. There's so much more to say. Let's do it all in a big hunk, not speed it up. We'll be back after this. This is Ben Gillette. Good year. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette here with Mike Goodeau on the CBS Free FM, and we're talking to Dee Snider. And you're playing this weekend, Friday and Saturday, at the Hard Rock with a goth orchestra.
18-piece gothic rock orchestra mixing known classical themes with known rock themes, all set to a spooky story narrated by yours truly.
And who wrote the story? You?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you and I both, that's another thing we have in common, we both have done and do voiceover work.
Yeah, you do a lot. I mean,
I've been doing less lately, but at one point I was the voice of MSNBC.
Really?
It was a great gig, home studio.
I was Comedy Central, you were MSNBC.
Yeah, Hardball with Chris Matthews.
Next, South Park. Kenny dies.
Great game.
Hardball. Yeah, we could have switched off. No one would have noticed the whole thing. And what is the instrumentation of the goth orchestra?
Six piece choir dressed as druids singing only in Latin, 6-piece string section looking like Anne Rice Goths, 6-piece rock band looking basically like Marilyn Manson. And it's really, I was supposed to have some music here, but certainly even just for you to enjoy and listen, because it's right up your alley, man.
But now, I was at the Hard Rock just like 2 days ago, and my wife and I were going through it. It was so amazing. We were looking at the clothes, and we went over. I saw you were coming to town on the posters. They have your clothes out there, the long coat you wore. It is the only thing in the Hard Rock that a human being could wear.
An actual full-size human being.
It's actually full-size. You know, the prince clothing would go on a body part of mine that's not mentionable on air. You know, bare. I mean, there's little doll clothes. You know, the Mick Jagger stuff, no shoulders, no height, no tiny little people. How?
I just had a very interesting observation, because that's another thing. All right, you're when I say straight, I mean clean and sober and, you know, and you're tall. And same for me, same for Ted Nugent, same for Gene Simmons. You think it's, all the little ones are banging heroin.
It
makes them men.
For the tall people in rock and roll, you also add, Joe Jackson and Rickard Casey.
That poor guy.
Rickard Casey.
How sad was that? Video came out. People saw what he looked like, end of his career. And I'm like, why do you think he put his shoes on the cover? It was his best feature. You look at Joe and go, hey, Joe, great feat.
So you're going to be, and who wrote the Latin? Because, Teller was a high school Latin and Greek teacher. He was a classics major.
Well, that was really weird. There's a website online, and it's run by the Catholic Church. and they will change words to Latin. So we were sending, because it's a story about good and evil. It's not about religion per se, but it's about evil forces and good forces. Mm-hmm. And when we sent them the words, and they actually sent an email that says, it looks like we're on the same side, or some priest. And I was like, they got no idea. Because QVC just said we're too dark for them. So that's where we got the Latin online.
And you just had it translated. And then,
yeah, things translated. And, there's some things like drink the blood of Satan, which is pretty readily available anywhere.
Sure, you can buy that anywhere. Yes, that's out of Moby Dick.
Yeah.
Did you write the music?
We took, like I said, known themes.
Okay, but I mean the Latin choir stuff?
Yeah, the choir stuff. So we mixed original stuff with known music from other stuff and created, basically, I would tell a piece of the story, and then we'd create a musical representation of that part of the story. And that's what goes down during the show. So
you stand over to one side in a long creepy coat?
Yeah, I walk off, and I come back out, I float onto the stage.
Oh, very nice.
And the druids come in and out, and it's very visual, great light. Light show, and has great appeal. Pretty much 11 to 70, blind, deaf, or crazy. You'll enjoy the show, and it's not quite so wholesome family entertainment.
Not quite. Yeah, okay, but are there other special effects? You're floating.
No, not really. I made that up.
Okay.
I always float.
But are there special effects?
It's we have some moments in the show. We've got a special moment.
Don't give away.
Yeah, I can't give away.
Don't give, because people are going to be going there. They
but
don't
it's,
have...
it's, you know what? This is the thing. Halloween is the second biggest... This is pretty frightening, actually. Yeah. You'll probably love this.
Yeah.
Second biggest holiday, only Christmas is bigger.
I know. We were working so hard to kick the ass of Easter.
Yeah.
We've done that. We're moving up. We're done. Christmas, we're coming after you. You're going down, Santa Claus.
And it's the fastest growing. And it's
the Vegas of holidays.
And it's the adult sector who are buying into it. And everybody's looking to expand their
it's
experience.
It's just because guys want to dress and drag.
And chicks want to be whores.
Yeah, exactly. That's
what's going on.
That's what they should change it to. Guys in drag, chicks as whores, October 31st. Tune in. Or I guess you could just say everybody dressed like whores, regardless of gender.
But, I think the reason it's growing is because there's no real, true religious connection.
It's essentially secular.
And everybody is going to get involved, and it's awesome. Everybody can enjoy it. So, but I'm like, where's the cool music? It's a cool holiday, and parties, no music, and Ghostbusters and the Monster Mash just ain't cutting it anymore.
Right?
There's no Rudolph for Halloween.
No.
What is it? The Monster Mash.
Oh,
he still works every year.
I was surprised he's still alive.
I think he is, isn't he? The last time I just was watching
his name again.
It's Bobby Boris
Pickett?
Pickett. Bobby Boris, something, the first name, but it is Pickett. It's, quote, Boris.
That's because the wicked Bobby Pickett is was already kind of taken. Wilson would get pissed off, and he's a badass. Yeah. He was a badass.
You don't want to ever argue with him.
With Wilson. So I said, where's the cool music? And I'm just so into it. My daughter was born on Halloween. Cheyenne. Like, I was in the delivery room with a leather face mask on, and just saw cool music. And everybody wants, they want more now. It's not just trick-or-treating or a party. They go to amusement parks, they go to a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to be like the musical element of this holiday.
And have you did it the past years in Vegas, too?
No, it's the first time in Vegas. We've done a few shows. It's really an ordeal to stage. There's costumes and makeup and a big crew and cast. And we've been doing it out of pocket, losing our shirts, but we really were passionate about it. And finally, Vegas is sort of a great place for this kind of entertainment, sort of seasonal. Hey, we're coming in, the big show, and it really plays well to it, as you well know.
Yeah, a lot of people come into Vegas for Halloween.
Yeah, and you come in and say, what's going on? And oh, look at that. Phantom's
but
curse.
You know how crazy we're getting on Halloween? We're doing The View. So that's, you know, we really go out there.
You're
we
going on The View.
All the way out. Yeah, all the way out. We're going
Woo!
To The View. Yeah.
I mean,
we're having my 15-month-old daughter do a trick. She's doing a card trick for the
on the view.
View. Yeah.
How did they get you on The View? Now I'm interviewing him. I do talk radio as well.
We do it. We do it about once or twice a year. It's just they have us on and it goes okay. It's
I would do
nutty
it.
Thing. It's this nutty thing going on The View. Although now it's got Rosie, so don't mention guns.
Yeah. Well, how and what's your relationship with Rosie?
We worked her show years and years ago, but I haven't talked to her since. Do you know
when she was nice?
Yeah, but she was nice. Well, I mean, when you bust Bernadette Peters for doing Annie Get Your Gun, you are a zealot. You're hardcore then.
Well, sure enough,
we won't be doing the bullet catch on The View.
It's very interesting that she's on that show. I mean, going from the queen of nice in, was in the 90s, was she? Or was she on the air?
Yeah.
Rosie, and then all of a sudden, the mulleted Rosie after the show. Whoa! What happened? It must be the hair. And now she's sort of swinging back a little bit, you know, the tolerant Rosie. But don't mention the guns.
Don't mention guns.
Is Tom Selleck going on enough anytime soon?
Man, that was an amazing interview, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Man, just nuts. And we never got back. You know, I don't know. There's not a. We'll do that after the next break because there's less time. But how did you find, what are the musicians for this? Where'd you get them?
Well, I want to turn to a lot of my friends, you know, this is people I've worked with over the years. And then as we reached out, because the album itself, Oculus Infernum, which means the Eye of Hell, mm-hmm. and it's in stores now, that's actually 24 pieces. We just couldn't afford to bring a whole horn section as well.
Yeah.
And being in New York, we just reached out to friends, musicians in the community. And when people heard what we were doing, mixing the classical and the rock and everything, everybody came to the table. We had no money. We did the album out of pocket, and they got into it. So we had pit musicians from Broadway and Juilliard trained guys, people who just thought, hey, this is different and cool. And it's actually, and there's a lot of rock musicians who've got a lot more to offer than the four chords that they're allowed to. I mean, case in point, me. One of the things that pisses me off most of all is the assumption that if you play straight-ahead, simple rock and roll, that's all you're capable of playing.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, in my band's case, it's what we like to play. I'm a classically trained countertenor.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I could have been singing opera. I could have been doing it. Not anymore. I burned my voice out on rock. But I like just basic 3-chord, 2-chord, 4-chord rock, man. That's the excrement. You know? You know, I mean, it doesn't mean I'm a moron, you know? So, which, unfortunately, I've got a lot of my peers who are selling that real hard.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, that's,
no, we are morons!
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of musicians out there, great musicians, who were capable of a lot more, and they were like, just ready to stand up to the opportunity to show what they could do. So,
and that's the Van Helsing's Curse at the Hard Rock Friday and Saturday. That's tomorrow and the day after.
Yep.
Here in Las Vegas, and this is Dee Snider we're talking to. This is Ben Gillette. Michael Gaudeau has not said a word yet, and we'll be back right after this. Free FM. Gillette, I guess I should say that. With Michael Gaudeau, we're here on the Free FM, CBS, and here with Dee Snider. And we were talking about similarities, you know, Kennedy, Lincoln. But the other difference is that Captain Howdy in Strangeland.
Did you watch?
In Strangeland,
yeah.
The bad guy is Captain Howdy, which is from The Exorcist.
Yeah, that's right with the name.
And my band that I played with in New York City with Kramer, who was the Butthole Surfers and Beck and all that stuff, we were called the Captain Howdy.
Get out!
So, and we, I believe, I don't think either one of us was there first. I think it's exactly at the same time. It's really funny.
You know what? That was to me, and when the first time I heard that, when she said, you know, in The Exorcist, she was playing with the Ouija board, and he says, he talks to me, and the mom said, who? And he said, Captain Howdy. It just gave me a little chill.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. And when I named my character Captain Howdy, I knew that people in the know, the minute early in the film they heard this guy was online talking to this girl and his name was Captain Howdy, that people in the know would go, oh, whoa, don't talk to that guy.
Exactly.
There's something wrong with that guy. And you probably felt the same way calling your band Captain Howdy.
I just love calling it. It's such a good name. It's one of the best things about The Exorcist. Even better than The Spider Walk. But
awesome piece, Lost.
But I want to get back to the PMRC thing. So you're speaking, and you come across much better than they expect. You take them out, and then what is their motive for tapping your phone?
Well,
and now with the Freedom of Information Act, have you been able to go in and find?
I didn't even
any of the
think
records?
Of that. I should be able to.
You should
that.
Be able to. Yeah,
I think that'd be good for my website.
Yeah, it'd be really good.
Yeah,
all right, I'm going to follow up on that.
Especially, you can find the parts where they use the black highlighter.
Oh, yeah. you know what? I walked out of there, and I definitely knew I had kicked ass.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly, I remember walking out and a reporter in this place. It was crazy. It was a crazy scene in the 80s. I mean, that was a big story. A reporter sticks his mic in my face and goes, "Dee, how do you feel?" And honest to God, the first word I said was dirty. Because you and me were raised at a time where they still thought there was better, greater people than us in Washington doing good things for everybody.
Yeah.
With our best interest in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm a child of the 50s and 60s, and you know, and yeah, we, when the Nixon era, we started to become aware. But you and I were in junior high school at that point.
Right.
But I'm sitting here going, these people aren't better than me. They're way worse than me. And I really just lost a lot of, I guess, respect and any leftover residual belief that there was some kind of, you know, greater good going on there.
Did you have any?
I became cynical at that point.
Did you have any contact with the people other than the stuff that was televised? Was there any green room discussion with the senators?
No, I never saw anybody, and I went home feeling pretty good, but then I saw the yellow journalism that was practiced by that day was mind-blowing. And that's, you know, all the press corps, they went back, and they chopped this thing up and made me and Frank look bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to think about it.
They didn't do that, because I watched it on a TV, and I read the newspapers. And
you disagree, because I felt that I was misrepresented.
I think they tried to misrepresent you, but I think the truth came through.
Well, the quotes, the monthlies.
Still came through beautiful.
Monthlies, really, the truth came out. I just found that the data...
And some
people,
of that testimony is on YouTube now, isn't it? I think some of the Zappa stuff is.
I would hope
I bet
is.
Yours is, too. Yeah,
I would hope
people
it
should go back and watch that. Really smart stuff was said and ignored.
So we went out afterwards, and that's when every town I went to was a press conference. But I realized it was not about my music. It was all about the politics.
Now, you were touring then,
with
Twisted
Sister. Mm-hmm. But our attendance is down, and we sort of became the poster boys for what was wrong with rock and roll, heavy metal. And the kids knew we were not one of the bad ones. So when Mom and Dad said, so Mom and Dad think we're the scourge, the kids go, well, I can't see Twisted Sister. Can I go see Motley Crue? Are they? Yeah, they're fine. Go ahead. And so we, you know, so we really, I won't say it's the only thing that hurt us. Recording Leader of the Pack was a big mistake. You know, I'm not going to, I'll blame myself. I feel much shame. But it definitely was not helpful to our careers.
Uh-huh. And then you, we're not going to take it. You brought out again for the Schwarzenegger campaign.
Yeah. I'm an Arnold supporter.
And how did that come about?
Well, this is, you know, people go, you support Arnold Schwarzenegger? I was an Arnold fan during his bodybuilding days. I read his book, Stay Hungry, which was part biographical, part motivational, and he inspired me.
To get in the shower naked with other men?
No, he didn't say anything about that at the time. Not that there's anything wrong with it, if that's your thing. No, but it was really sort of, you know, he really had drive, and I wrote our album, Stay Hungry. fired up on Arnold, so to speak, and dedicated my album Stay Hungry, where We're Not Going to Take It was on, to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Never met him. I don't think he knew we existed. And then one day I get a call that Arnold wants to use We're Not Going to Take It, a song I wrote inspired by him, for his campaign. To me, this was a full circle thing. And I'm into Arnold.
Did you go out to California to perform anything at the rally?
Yeah, then he asked me if I would perform at his rally, and I did. And that was like a great thing.
Twisted Sister has broken up completely.
We're actually reunited as for reunion shows. The band did not want to perform because they were not, some of the members, comfortable with his political
agenda.
Being
Republican, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a Northeast Republican, fiscally conservative, socially liberal, and
keep going in that direction both ways, you end up libertarian, But you got a little ways to go.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When you go online, you will find me on, like, considered a supporter of all independents, Democrats and Republicans, and the scourge of all three as well, because I have voted and supported all three.
So how'd you like being around Schwarzenegger?
He was great to me. He's a political animal. He didn't grab my ass or anything. And he's a political animal, that guy. And I'm not surprised to see him in politics. I mean, political in the world, he knows how to work a room.
Now, is that the only political rallies you've ever done? Was the Schwarzenegger? Did you do other stuff?
No, it's the only one I've ever done.
So you were out there at rallies before Schwarzenegger came up? You'd be there with the band?
No. Arnold asked if he could use a song for his campaign. And I said yes. Then he asked if the band would come and play at his rally. And the band said no, and I said hell yeah. And I got.
But other people know those chords.
Yeah, it's pretty straight ahead.
you could write those down, and with 4 or 5 months rehearsal, you get a Juilliard graduate to play We're Not Going to Take
It. But the odd thing is, this is a song that was on the list of the Philly 15. So this was one of the songs that I was defending in Washington, and now is, everybody knows We're Not Going to Take It. It's become almost a folk song. You go to sporting events, you go to political rallies.
What was it on? What are the lines that made it filthy?
They had it rated V for violence. There's no lines in there. I said, this is no more violent than the Declaration of Independence.
Is it the word ain't?
Fight is in there. This is a Declaration of Independence, that song. They had seen the video, and in the video there was some cartoon violence.
Sure.
And I said, they're putting together...
That's throwing the guy out the window and all
that stuff. Yeah. And that was designed after a Roadrunner cartoon.
Sure.
That no matter what you do to Wile E. Coyote, he gets up and comes back for more. So they had it on there for V if they wanted to. V for violence.
You do know that in Hillary Clinton's TV ad that just came out, the second thing she says she'll do, number one, fix health care. Good.
Okay.
And number two is stop children from being exposed to violent video games. That's the second one. So the Democrats, haven't given up on that crazy tipper sticker type stuff.
Yeah, well, that's why any rational thinking human being cannot vote any party line. And that's where I'm sitting. I mean, you've got to make your best judgment, and it's tough.
Because you live
times.
In New York, right? So she's your senator.
Yeah. I did not vote for her. I don't know how she's doing right now. I'm not going to comment on that. But to me, I was like, wait a minute. So you sat next to the guy who was flying the plane for 4 years, and you go, oh, I can do that? My wife's been with me for 30. She's not ready to get up on stage in front of Twisted Sister. Okay? That's not a... I require more than that. But anyways, I try to make a judgment. Sometimes I voted for Republicans, and sometimes Democrat, and sometimes Independent, and I voted for Perot. I figured he'd get shot if he was elected, but it'd be a hell of a week.
Wow, wouldn't that have been great? But how, the greatest moment.
Richard Pryor talking about if a black man was ever elected, ducking, keep moving.
And we're ducking on the radio.
Yes.
But Perot, I mean, one of the most beautiful moments in pure American politics was him being called crazy and then dancing to Patsy Cline's Crazy with his wife on television. I mean, I just said, you know, I wasn't for it before, but this way of giving up is just the coolest way to do it. You know, it's like Kinky, you know, running for governor of Texas. It's the greatest thing ever. You ever going to go into politics? Use we're not going to take it for yourself?
You know what? People keep asking me about that, and I just think that politics is a vile world.
Yes.
You've got to be a piece of crap to survive it.
Well, that's why they're suggesting it, I think.
Yeah, thanks. Really, now that you mention it.
You know, but
it's just, you know what, and you know this and I know this, the smartest president we ever had, and this is just a fact, was Jimmy Carter.
No, Richard Nixon.
Nixon?
Nixon was crazy.
You mean
crazy.
IQ?
IQ, yeah.
I was told it was Carter. Well, Carter's certainly a brilliant man.
Yeah.
But he was completely ineffectual in Washington because it doesn't take brilliance to function there. You've got to play the game. You've got to work the room. And a real decent human being cannot survive. Not that I'm all that decent, but I like to think I'm more decent than them.
I also would like to see how Jefferson would rate there with different IQ points. I think Jefferson was a pretty smart cat. I think before you have the IQ testing, which is only 20th century.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I think you might want to say, you know, Carter and Nixon for the 20th century, but we didn't get earlier than that. We may just not know. Because, you know, the founding fathers, a lot of the stuff, they seem smart to me.
Yeah, there were some bright men. Well, they didn't have a lot of stuff sapping their brain power, except maybe the occasional slave.
Exactly, Sally. But, you know, their version of we're not going to take it is, I'm not going to say clearer than yours, but may have more nuance.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't want to insult you or anything.
And what's happened with that song is just insane. We're not going to take. I mean, you know, here's that. So it was a scourge. We were the Manson of our day. And now what? I just sold the song to a feminine lubricant. There's a new product that helps feminine.
One more lie, you're going to turn to stone.
They said, listen, there's a new product that's waiting FDA approval for feminine dryness. They want to use. We're not going to take it. I said, I'm an artist. How much? I said, absolutely six figures. So, and I said, well, wait, I don't get it. Is the guy going to sing that? I'm not going to take it here, honey. Slap this on. I mean, I don't know.
And is it for television?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it was a great
national campaign.
National campaign.
Oh, I'm looking so forward to that. I'm looking so forward. And are they using your vocal?
My vocal.
Oh, it's the whole thing.
You sold the whole thing.
Well, there's a get behind. It's not like you're selling beer. You know,
who is it?
It's something you're really behind. That's great. Now, you have a homework assignment after today. I'm going to say that everybody should go see your show Friday and Saturday, but your homework assignment is to find out if they really tapped your phone, if they really were going through that, and what dossier they had on you.
And it wasn't just a stone paranoid postman?
Yes, exactly. Because getting your information from a stone postman is not necessarily the best place to get your information. And just do another, we got another, like another minute. Tell us a little bit more about the show and where it's going to be, the Van Helsing's Curse.
It's at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino right here in Las Vegas. So if you want to fly in, love to have you. But if you're in town and listening to this show, come on down. Gothic, 18-piece Gothic Rock Orchestra. And this is really cool music for the coolest holiday. And Saturday is a very special event. My wife and I, Suzette, are renewing our vows. And you know what? This is going to be a Gothic wedding ceremony. I'm going to be looking like a dead dude. So there's going to be no Bibles present.
Okay.
Unless they're flaming.
We'll talk about it if you can get. We'll still talk about the first nine that are on the list on top of me. That's Dee Snider, Van Helsing's Curse at the Hard Rock Cafe and the hotel. This is Ben Gillette. Michael Goodell. Goodbye.